Okay, so it's like an interesting topic. I think we've done it before a little bit, but like the Rachel dynamic where she goes back and forth with Leah is really fascinating. I kind of want to share it from a slightly different angle, and that's the fact that there's two stories, only two stories that interrupt the birth of all of the children. So I kind of want to try to figure out why that is, right? Why does the Torah break for those two stories? One would have to imagine that certainly when it comes to the second story, the story of the Dudaim and Reuven, that there must have been some other cute story somewhere along the way of something that one of the little kids did. And so why is it that at this precise moment we have like the involvement of the Torah to share that with us and not in any others? So I found by accident an article by Rabbi Grossman, Rabbi Dr. Yonatan Grossman, that I thought answered a lot of those questions and raised other questions along the way. And then back Rosh Hashanah time, I picked this topic out because shul, in the many hours in shul, so I read half a book by Nechama Price, it was fascinating. It's basically, I think it's called The Blueprint of the Tribes, something like that. What it does is it starts with each Shevet. It's actually a really good read. I highly recommend it for anybody that is looking for something to fill their time. Some of it might sound familiar. But it starts with all 12 Shvatim as kids, and then afterwards it goes and follows their trajectory as adults. So it'll show you this story with Reuven, and then afterwards it'll tell you, look what happens to Reuven as a not only as an adult, but also as like a Shevet. And then it'll do the same thing for all the Shvatim. Obviously, some of the Shvatim are a little bit harder because there's not all that much material to work with, but it's an interesting read. So I guess that is my starting point. So again, the first question is why interrupt the story for these two episodes with Rachel, and we'll go from there. So the psukim start Vatera Rachel ki lo yalda liyakov vatakane Rachel bachutav vatomer liyakov havali banim vim ayin meit anochi. So Rachel was jealous of her sister, and she says to Yaakov, "Give me children, and if not, I will die." Right? I guess it's like a little play on "Give me liberty or give me death." So that's what she's saying. She's saying, if I don't have children, like, it's all just not worth it. So Vicharav Yaakov Rachel. So Yaakov gets angry at Rachel. So he says to her, like, what do you want from me? Like, am I in place of God that I withheld children from you? So it's a very strange answer. So Rashi says what he's basically answering is, she says to him, you know, you're different than your father. Your father Yitzhak davened with his wife. Your mother, why? Because they both were barren, but you have no reason to daven, so you're not worried about me because you have all these kids from Leah. So he turns around and says, what are you talking about? Do you think my tefillah actually makes a difference? It's God that's the one that gives you children. So go talk to God if you have a problem. Again, it does not really strike us as the most sensitive of things to say, but okay. So what happens next? She says, here's my maid servant Bilha, right? Have children with her, and I'll build through her. So that's what thank you. That's what she says. What's interesting is Yaakov, even though I cut out from Pasuk Dalet to Yud Gimel, Yaakov has no response. I mean, we know that he agrees to it because what's the very next thing that happens? Bilha becomes pregnant. But Yaakov is a passive participant in this whole thing. It's sort of like, go take care of it. And then all of a sudden, you know, she's pregnant. So it takes like a, you know, yeah, David, you're about to say something. Maybe.
No, it's fine.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, the fact, again, I understand that he's not really a passive participant because he does impregnate Bilha, but from like a textual standpoint, like it seems like he is an object that's being moved in the story. She complains, he does respond, she has a response, and then he goes and does whatever he's supposed to do. And then the same thing with Zilpah. Zilpah, like, becomes his wife through Leah also. But again, Yaakov seems to be passive in the whole process. Okay, so now, Pasuk Yud Aleph. וילך רובן במק ציר חיתים, וימצאו דודאים בשדה, ויראו אותם עליה אמו, ותאמר רחל עליה בתני נא לי מדודי בנך. So Reuven goes in the time of the Ketzir Chitim. He finds Dudaim in the field. He brings him to Leah, his mother. And Rachel says to Leah, please give me from the, not all, but some of the Dudaim of your son. So what's extra in that pasuk? It's probably a lot of extra, but what are some of the extra things? Okay, good. So we don't need emo. It could have been just Vayveotam Eleya. Why do we care that it's Bimei Ketzir Chitim? Good. Actually, Surly, I just would change one thing. I wouldn't say Vayveotam Eleya. I would say Vayveotam Elimo. Right? We don't need to know. Right? We don't need both of them, but I would get rid of Leya. It would make more sense. Okay, good. Get rid of Bimei Ketzir Chitim. Anything else? Yeah, why do we, like, Tnina li mi du da'ei, right? Mi du da'eich, right? Give me from your du da'im. Why do we need to know b'neich from her son? So all good questions. Now, also, vayelech Reuven. So vayelech Reuven is a phrase that we actually have again. If you take a look at the middle of the page, lamed hei chav bet, so it says, vayhi b'shchon Yisrael ba'aretz ahi, vayelech Reuven. Reuven goes, and what does he do? Vayishkav et Bilha Pilegesh Aviv. He sleeps with Bilha, the Pilegesh of his father. Now, it's interesting that Vayishkav is also in our story. That's how the story ends, right? By Yaakov sleeping with Leah. But one has to wonder, right, if there is a connection between Vayishkav, but certainly Vayelech Reuven. Reuven goes twice. That's all he does. I don't think actually possible. I'm quickly checking in Vayeshev. I don't think we have the same language when he goes to the boar. Actually, I think it's Vayashav El Habor. That's interesting. So it's like same letters, but completely different word. All right, sorry, bear with me. Yeah, it's interesting. It says Vayashav Reuven al Bor, so it's not Vayeshev. It's not Vayelech. Okay, not even anything. Fine. Okay, but Vayelech Reuven. Reuven goes twice. He goes here, and he goes by the story of Bilha. And both times, right, it's a similar story. He's coming to Nechama Price says he's coming to show dedication to his mom. Right, Reuven watches the suffering that his mom has, and it's hard for him. So what does he do? He brings her flowers, hoping that the flowers will what? Will somehow make her feel better. Right? It's a beautiful thing, you know. Assuming that you accept what most of the Mefarshim say, that he was a little kid. Right? It's a beautiful picture of a 7-year-old kid bringing flowers to his mom and saying, "Mom, look, I really care about you. I'm sorry. I know it stinks that Dad hates you." Nechama Price paints the picture of Reuven, you know, being the one to comfort his mom so often when she's crying about the sufferings that she has at the hands of Yaakov. So he's a kid that listens and hears all and sees all of that. So he brings her the flowers. And the same thing after Rachel dies, when the tent is moved primarily to Bilha rather than to Leah, he steps up and stands in to deal with a sense of dedication to his mom. Fine. So again, just interesting that they use the same language and try to connect it. So what's Leah's response to this seemingly, you know, sweet request of, can I have the flowers? So she says, isn't it enough that you took my husband, not our husband, but my husband, Now you want my flowers also. So she says, fine, I'll make you a deal. He can sleep with you tonight instead of the flowers. So she, Yaakov comes back from the field that evening, and Leah comes out to greet him and or towards him and says, I paid for you for tonight. Come to my tent. And interestingly, she says, Bedudae bini, right? For the flowers of my son. He sleeps with her that night. Again, he's passive in the sense that he doesn't have a response other than he goes to the bedroom, but there's no conversation at all. Okay, so that's anyway to figure out what's going on with all of that, why Yaakov is so passive with that. But Vayavo Yaakov min hasadeh, where else? The only other place in Tanakh we have Vayavo somebody min hasadeh. Vayavo Esav min hasadeh v'hu ayef. Right, if you take a look at the source under Lamed Hey, towards the bottom of the page, Vayav Yitzhak et Esav kitzai b'fiv, Rivka ohevet Yaakov, Vayazad Yaakov nazir, Vayom Esav min hasadeh v'hu ayef. Now, interestingly, we have there also, there is love. He loves one person and not the other, right? Same thing here. He loves one person and not the other, right? So that, and then what happens? Vayavo Esav min hasadeh. Esav comes from the field. It was Yaakov that comes from the field in our place. What in the world is the connection there? So the connection's a little bit more complicated because it's not really, it has nothing to do with Yaakov. It has to do with the person purchasing, right? Rachel and Esav both make a purchase in their, or both make a sale rather, in their stories. They sell something that's a right to them, right? What Leah sells is tangible, and what Yaakov sells is tangible, right? You can feel, you can taste the soup, you can feel and smell the flowers, but Rachel and Esav are selling things that are like, they're not concrete. They both sell something that's a right for them, a lot less than for what they're worth. And if you take a look at Rashi below, so Rachel says, I'm selling you my night, right? Tonight was my night and he was supposed to sleep here. Rashi, the Medrash, is taking quite a strong stand here because she gave this up and she degraded a night with Yaakov, the eternal sleep resting place, she would not get with Yaakov. That's a very harsh Rashi. I'm actually hoping that when we finish, we'll be able to offer an alternative, which is a much, much softer possibility of as to why this happens. But again, we seem to have people giving up something that matters to them and they sell it for much cheaper than it's worth. All right, one last connection to a different story. Vayishkav ima. She slept with him, or he slept with her. Balayla hu, that night. So if you take a look at Parag Yudtet Pasuk Lamed Gimel, right above that Rashi, it's the story of Lot and his daughters. It's on that night. I don't know if balayla hu, if those are the only two times in all of Tanakh, but you have sleeping and that night. Again, in both there, Lot was very passive. We don't hear from Lot. We have no reaction from Lot. It's the same thing with Yaakov. He just balayla hu. That night he does what he has to do and that's it. Now again, he's not drunk and he's not there. He's conscious as of what he's doing, but there's this passive piece to what's to Yaakov. So we have to understand what's going on with all of that. And both times, of course, the person that slept that ends up being slept with ends up being impregnated. So just, you know, something to play around with. Okay, so a couple of questions. What does Leia want? Like, what's her end goal in this whole thing? She, that, you know, if Rachel rants and rages in Pasuk Aleph, it would seem as though Leia does the same thing in Pasuk Tet Vav. Neither one of these is a completely rational statement. For Rachel to say, if I don't have children, I might as well be dead. Yaakov is not wrong in his response. In responding, what do you want from me? I'm not God. He probably feels bad for her. But who knows if this is the first time that they had this conversation. I'm sure that they spoke about her infertility for a long time and her struggles. But maybe this just really resonated when she said it like this. And maybe there's even almost a piece of like the Elkanah story where Chana says, I want children. He says, but I'm better than 10 children. Yaakov might feel, but I'm so good to you. I love you. There's no question that you're my favorite. What do you want from me? And then she, and that's his response. But also Leia, when she says, like, you stole my husband, what does she really mean by that? So that's my second question. What's the deal with Reuven? What do we learn from this whole story and from all those extra words? So those are my three questions that I want to try to understand. Any thoughts, any answers, any suggestions, any additional questions?
Why does Rachel, I mean, it's in the notion that the Dudaim were some sort of fertility, something or other, so she's trading the night for another opportunity to take advantage of the Dudaim, if that's true or shad or medrash or whatever. But otherwise, I agree. Yaakov is being, the night with him is being sold for some flour, like the magic beans. I mean, it seems pretty, Rashi seems right, it is degrading.
Yeah.
And you think that that's what you would want most of all, to have the knights have the opportunity to be impregnated. I mean, that's her life's goal. She just said as much, and now she's like selling it for some flowers. It seems incongruous.
Right. So the question is, I mean, he rotated every four nights between them. So it's hard to imagine that every fourth night he was sleeping with each of his wives in that sense, and therefore was, you know, sleeping with all of his wives every single night, or whatever, you know, in rotation. Was she particularly, was it the right time of the month and she was more fertile and then the flowers would push her over the top? It's not, the flower story is not inconsistent with a different story, right? What else does Rachel do in this parasha that shows us she's into, like, I don't know, like, right, she steals the trophim. Now, again, you can say that she steals the trophim because she's concerned that her father, you know, will stop with idol worshiping. But really, like, I mean, come on, like, what are the possibilities that really was going to happen? As an aside, so I woke up this morning to an email from, like, the Rabbi Lamb Legacy, whatever, Center. They send out two of his drashos every Thursday night. So he has one on Lama Ganata Elohai. So he quotes a medrash that says, what happened? So there's this, like, big meeting at the mound, right? They all get together at the mountain, and Yaakov with his family and Lavan with his men. And what they say to Lavan declares, Lama Ganata Elohai, why did you steal my idols, right? It was wrong what you did. So the medrash says that actually, and it's such a beautiful medrash, it's Yaakov's kids that turn to Lavan and say, you know, Saba, how could it be? Right? Idols can't be stolen. So in that sense, maybe it's true. You know, if she gets to that point where the kids say that, it's much harder for Lavan to be like, oh, like, he was really, like, proven wrong. And the little kids with their, like, sharp tongue really set him off. But the fact that she steals the trafim could be also, maybe she has a little bit of where she believes in this kind of stuff. In I don't want to say believes in skulas, because I know that I'll get myself in trouble somewhere for saying that. But it could be that she believes in these, like, in the magic beans, David. I like that. We'll go with that, right? She believes in, like, these things that really, like, they're not real, but it's a hope. I've tried everything. Nothing's working. Maybe the flowers will work. I've tried everything. Maybe the trafim will work or whatever. So, yeah, it's not inconsistent with her personality. Okay, any other thoughts, questions, answers? Okay, so let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, actually, let's start with the Radak, and then we'll go back from Radak to Rashi. Radak is right underneath the Rashi. Vayelech Reuven. Reuven haya az keben sheva shanim. So Reuven at this time was about 7. V'yatzala sadeh b'mei ketzir chitim. And he went out to the field during the time of the ketzir chitim, of the harvesting of the wheat. U'matza dudaim b'laktam v'viyam meleimo. And he finds dudaim. He harvests them and he brings them back to his mother Leah.
What does it say, my Dina? Did she also go away and tell us something?
Let's see. That is Perek Lamed Dalet. I should probably use a Chumash. It'll go a lot quicker than using the Tanakh. There's a lot less prakim. No, just Vatete Dina Bat Leah Sher Yaldal Yaakov L'Ot Bevenot Ha'aretz. She goes out to see the land, but not so much the field. Okay, so fine. So what Radak is saying is that he went out in the time of the harvest. Now, it's a little bit misleading because Ruth goes out also b'mei ketzir chitim. What does she bring back from the field? B'mei ketzir chitim.
Exactly.
Right. So you would think that if you're going out b'mei ketzir chitim, you're going to bring back what? Wheat. And you could understand if he brought back wheat, his message to his mom would be, listen, you know what? I brought you something. We'll turn it into something yummy. It'll make you feel better, right? You know, I don't know. I had a really, really stressful day the other day. And I don't know, sat by my computer for way too many hours. And I came out of my office. Malki came back from shopping and she had like a pint of Ben & Jerry's here, right, in Israel. People said, in Israel, people buy Ben & Jerry's. You're doing a mitzvah here. By that's what all the art. You should Google it. It's like so sick that's what people like. If you don't buy it, Unilever will lose money and whatever. I don't know. Anyway, she brought back a thing of Ben & Jerry's. She goes, I thought you could use it. It's like, it's true. Definitely was better afterwards, right? Yeah, so that would make more sense. He brings back flowers. Like, why? And if he brings back flowers, so then, David, it was your question. Then why do you need to be make tzir chitim? Just say, vayelech Reuven, vayimtzad udayim basadeh, or vayelech Reuven basadeh, vayimtzad udayim. Wouldn't that be enough? Why do you need to be make tzir chitim? So it's just interesting that Radak does not actually address that. But he says that dudaim him esev shashar sham hu metzuyar tziur tv kedmut adam. The dudaim are a type of growth that their root looks like the human being. Ulay shama Reuven mashomrim hamon kemoim leherayon haisha. Maybe Reuven heard that people said, oh, you know, this is something that helps with fertility. Ulafisha amdaimo miladet hevi am eleha. And perhaps when he noticed that his mom had ceased to give birth, he brought them to her. So it says, "Avala davar hazeh eino emet ki lo haya kein lo lama lo harta Rachel shalachavia." But if this actually was a fertility treatment, then it would be then it's wrong, because then who should have had the kid? Rachel. V'gam leya lo harta b'sipadam sherei amar v'ishma lokim leya. And Leah didn't become pregnant because of this, because we know it says that God heard her and she gave birth. So the Radak is saying a lot. First off, he's explaining why it was this that Dudaim that he goes and brings back. Right? There was supposed to be some sort of like help medicinally for people to give birth. Right? If anybody here is a Harry Potter fan or at least read the books, so they translate Dudaim as mandrakes. And in, I think it's the second book, the mandrake actually is this like vegetation that you pull out of the ground, and it has like this ugly baby looking person connected to its root, right? So I know last night Ariella asked Malky and I a question, and I was like, yeah, it's like, that's where that comes from. Like, she was asking about this whole story about the Dudaim, and she didn't understand. It's like, sounds crazy, which I guess there is definitely what to sound crazy, but that's what the Radak is saying. Where's the Radak getting this from? So Rabbi Grossman has a beautiful explanation where he says that the Radak is talking about Bimei Ktzir Chitim. Ktzir Chitim is a time of where the field is full of life, it's vibrant, it's fertile. He goes out to the field at the time where it's fertile and brings back something that's hoping it will help with the fertility. Now Rashi addresses specifically why we need Bimei Ktzir Chitim, and says, "Lagid shevchan shel shvatim sha'et katzir haya v'lo pashat yado begezel avi chitim ushorim el dvar hefker shein adam makbibo." He brings back the mandrakes, the dudaim, which are something that what? People are mafkir. Nobody cares about. It's like when your kids bring back dandelions, right? Way back in the day, because they, right, they look pretty, but they're really weeds. Nobody's upset when you pull them, the dandelions out of their field. Same thing here. And that is the idea that Rashi wants us to know. And that's what the Pasuk wants to know with all this extra information. Reuven was noble. And if you look at the Midrashim, what actually Leah says, look at my son versus Esav. My son, he goes out to the field and he takes stuff that's hefker. Esav went out to the field and what? He killed other people's animals, which were not hefker. That's what's suggested here, and it's to show the greatness of Reuven. Okay.
There's just one more thought on the Make It Sirti Tim. So that's spring. That's Pesach time.
Okay.
So reverent for Pesach time. And that is Easter, fertility. I mean, that's the season. Spring is the season of fertility.
Okay, perfect. So yeah.
It's not necessarily be exactly when the harvest of the wheat. Why did you get wheat? You know, why did you get dudaim instead of wheat? It's the season. It's the spring season.
Okay, so that could be also where Rabbi Grossman is getting the notion of the season leading to the thoughts of fertility. Okay, so I think we certainly addressed why all this extra language by Reuven. The focus on Ben is the only piece that we didn't really address. So we have three questions left. Why interrupt the story for these two episodes with Rachel? What do each of the women want? And what can we learn from Reuven? I'm not sure that we'll fully be able to answer the question of why interrupt these stories for the two episodes of Rachel, but maybe when we answer the question of what each woman wants, we'll be able to do that a little bit more. What is clear is that Rachel wants nothing more in this story than children. What does Leah want in this, right? That I think that's obvious. What does Leah want?
Yaakov's love.
Right, yeah, so she wants a husband, because she has kids, and Rachel wants children, despite the fact that she has a husband, right? That is.
I think Leah wants more children, because when she had Yehuda, you know, the Medrash, I guess it's Medrash Mishnah, that the notion was four wives, people would have three. So she had the fourth, and she recognized she got, and maybe Yehuda, she had more than her share. And so nobody had, when she had Yehuda, nobody had any. None of the other wives, and matter of fact, Zilpah, Bilhah and Zilpah were not wives at all yet, because there were just two wives at the time. They hadn't been given. So I'm not sure why they didn't think that they would each have six. Why did they even think that their handmaids would become wives? But either way, right, once she got past four, maybe she's thinking, I can have six, or I can have all 12. Maybe she wanted more children, the more the merrier. She already passed her allotment. There's no upper limit now except for 12.
Right.
I think she sees that that's her only way to being favored in Yaakov's eyes is through having kids. Right? I mean, that's from Avram on down, it's all been about developing generations, developing the Bnei Yisrael. And she knows she's not, you know, between her and Rachel, he favors Rachel considerably, and her only chance of getting moving up in his eyes is through having more children.
Right. So the question is, why does she want the children? Does she want the children because it's, you know, for the sake of having kids? Or does she want kids because she feels like if I reach which I think both of you are saying, if she reaches above her allotment and she has more kids, is she hoping that that's going to actually score her what her real goal is? That's to have a husband.
For her, I think it's just the more the better. If it's, you know, if one kid gets her a little bit of favor and two or three gets, you know, her share of favor, then six or more is, you know, can only be better.
Right, but her rant in Pasuk Tet Vav, like, what's the heart of her line is, what, Hama'at Kachteichad Ishi, right, you've stolen my husband. Meaning, in the rawest moment, that's when you really see what the person wants. Rachel, v'atekana Rachel v'achotav v'tomer l'Yaakov, hava li banim. I want kids. That's what I need. That's what I want. And then she says, hama'at kachteichad ishi, isn't enough that you stole my husband. Right? So, perhaps that's why she says over and over again, right, the word that comes up probably, it might even be the mila mancha here, is ben. Right? She keeps referring, we keep hearing of Reuben as the Ben. Why do we need to know that? Even when she says, Kisachor skarticha bedudae beni, why does she need that? There's this focus on, he's my kid. But I think, which I think is probably, you know, somewhat referencing to where Rachel's head is. So what's going on in this story? So Nechama Price says that Rachel desperately wanted children, which she didn't have. And Leah desperately wanted the love of her husband. She wanted to actually feel like she had a husband more than she got. So she says, she answers so beautifully, what is the irony is that none of them will achieve in life what they want, but they'll get it in death. Take a look at the last source. V'tamen Rachel v'tikaver b'derech Ephrata hi beit lachem. Rachel dies B'derech Ephrat, which is Beit Lechem. It's so funny. Malki and I went to Kever Rachel a few weeks ago. I never realized it is so close to Yerushalayim. Like, it really, it's like walking distance. It's like under a mile from the edge of Yerushalayim. I mean, I don't know if I would walk it, but it really, like, I don't know, maybe I've never taken that route before, but like literally, like it's just like a stone's throw on some days from like the edge of Yerushalayim. So that's where she's buried. And this is Kever Rachel until this very day.
Not this very day, that very day.
That is true. Thanks. So anyway, what happened? What are we supposed to do with this? So let's remember, we had the Rashi that David actually liked, the Fisha Zilzala B'Mishka V'Tzadik. But look, listen to this Rashi. Now, this Rashi is not from Parshat Vayishlach. This Rashi is from the end, from Vayechi, when Yaakov is asking Yosef to pull strings to allow him to be buried in Israel. He says, just remember that your mother was buried on the side of the road. And he addresses at that point in time, what? The elephant in the room. Why didn't I bring her into the land? Why didn't I bring her to Maris HaMachpela? Maris HaMachpela is not quite as close. You have to go through the Gush and everything else, but it's still, it's a 25-minute drive, 20-minute drive there. It's a day's journey by foot. They could have done it. So Rashi says, Vekbera sham lo halachtia afilu beit lechem lachnisa l'aretz. You didn't even bring her to Beit Lachem to be in like a city, but you buried her really on the side of the road. And I know, Yosef, that you have like tainas on me. Understand, I did this because God wanted this. Why? It should be a help for her sons. When the Jewish people are exiled by who? By Bavel. Vayu overim derech sham, and they were leaving there. Yatzat Rachel kivra bocha mevakeshet aleim rachamim shemar kol raman yishma. Right, she cries for her children. Hakadosh Baruch Hu meshiva yesh sachar lo pulateich veshavu banim legvulam. That there was value to your efforts, because in the end, veshavu banim legvulam, your children will come back. Now, which children were exiled at this point in time? Bavel exiles the north, right? But it's not really Binyamin, because Binyamin is such a minor, like, player. It's Yehuda. And yet, who's crying for Yehuda? It's Rachel. Says Nechama Price so beautifully that each of them achieved in death what they couldn't in life. In death, she becomes Mama Rachel. She becomes the one that is the mother of the Jewish people, not Leah. But what does Leah get in death? Leah gets in death the opportunity to be buried alongside her husband. Nobody will ever question the connection, because you just go a few miles down the road from Kever Rachel, and what do you see? You see that they rest eternally next to each other. They each want so badly to have something, and sadly, neither one of them will be able to truly feel it in life. But in death, they actually get it. What is interesting is that Reuven maybe doesn't ever acknowledge this, but it's the children of the children of Leah through Yehuda that eventually acknowledge that Leah will never be the wife, right? In Vayigash, it's Yehuda says, right, my father had but one, you know, but one wife. That's what he says. So everybody at some point comes to the reality of what the relationship is, but they do ironically get what they want, not in life, but afterwards.